This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday and you're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle and I'm chatting with Jan Daniel Ace, sleep help therapist in private practice. This could possibly be the most important show you listen to. And that's my personal opinion because I'm a huge advocate of hydration and of sleep. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019. We're really grateful to have JD Ace, sleep therapist, joining us on the show today. JD, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Nick, for inviting me.
So, you know, sleep is such an important thing. It's something that can be the easiest and the most challenging thing to get right. You and I chatted a little bit briefly before we started the show. And sort of for me, the last quarter this year has been very challenging. Lots of travel, lots of very late nights, very early mornings, nonstop work. I think the one competition that we live streamed and I took photos in a 5 week 5 or 6 day period took about 40,000 photographs. So that's non-stop focus and concentration. The nutrition's maybe going out of the window. Now I got to tell you, I'm properly feeling it now. I'm feel like I'm operating on 10%. But let's get into it now with sleep. Firstly, what is sleep and why is it so important?
Well, there's actually a lot of definitions. On sleep. The main idea that I want to carry over is that sleep is not a loss of consciousness. Well, it is a loss of consciousness, but it's not unproductive. Many people have this idea of sleep is a waste of time because I can work in that time, or I can be more productive or study or whatever in that time. And that sleep is literally, if you want me to give you a definition, this is not an academic clinical definition. Sleep is our own superpower.
Absolutely. Okay? Love that. Because love that.
Sleep is an active, productive thing that adds immense value to our lives. So it's not like we are losing our consciousness and nothing happens. There's very specific things that happens with us while we are asleep. It literally keeps us alive.
I think so to put it perhaps into another form or a simpler context, anyone who's been to gym and trained legs really, really hard understands that you need a couple of days to let your legs recover, those major muscle groups recover. Because if you don't, then there's going to be a problem. So is that a similar thing for sort of with our bodies and with our minds, our brains? Yes. They need to recover from the pressure we put them under.
Yes, when we sleep, there's a sleep stage that we call deep sleep or slow wave sleep or delta sleep that literally fixes our bodies. You know, it get rid of damaged cells, it rebuilds damaged cells, old cells get secreted. It's one of the only places where our hearts can actually beat a bit slower and rest. Rest is not sleep. Lying in your bed and resting is not sleep. Sleep is way more productive, you know, than just resting on your bed or resting on a couch. That's not sleep. We are talking about sleep here. So it is. It's also important for psychological rest during REM sleep, mainly. That's where we are working with everything that happened with us during the day. You know, emotional rest, emotional rejuvenation. That's also important. Yeah.
I think we're going to take a quick ad break here. When we're back from ads, I want to go into sort of the practical aspects of sleep recovery. What is the body doing? One of the things I'd like to touch on, and I hope the listeners don't mind me saying this, but you know, when you wake up and you go to the bathroom, your urine is a lot darker than usual. Now, there can be a dehydration component to that, but you mentioned the body is clearing stuff out. So I want to touch on that. and what is actually happening in the body when we sleep. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
We are chatting with JD Ace, sleep expert, sleep help therapist, and we're talking all
sleep
things sleep.
Is fine. Yeah.
Okay, done. All right.
So I work with sleep illnesses mainly. I'm not a scientist. I use science, my colleague scientist friends, to implement, you know, into practice. So yeah, yes. That's
What are some of the processes that are happening in the body when we sleep? Let's look at the mind, the brain, and then the body.
So in the body when we sleep, I actually want to show you a picture, but I can't. what happens? The two things are happening physiologically and anatomically, and then mentally as well. So when we sleep first, and we go into slow wave sleep, what happens in our bodies is one of the main things is literally our heart rate slows down. Our heart rate slows down, our blood pressure drops. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are also a lot of things that happens in terms of physiological rejuvenation takes place. The liver is actually working a bit harder because it secretes all the chemicals and all the let's call it bad chemicals mm-hmm. out of the system. And other things that happens that is not, you know, it's just more interesting. You mentioned urine output now. There's hormones and peptides and stuff that blocks urine production at night.
Right.
That we can be able to sleep longer. You know, there's all those little interesting things. But in terms of health and rejuvenation, all the organs rest. I can get very technical but the main thing to remember is that old and damaged muscles gets repaired. From a mental point of view, as you know, is that we need sleep to cope emotionally with life, you know, to thinking clearer. To think clearer, to think more productive, to think more creative. All those stuff is happening when we sleep. I mean, a common thing that people say is, don't worry, I'll tell you tomorrow, let me sleep on it tonight. Mm. You know?
No, 100%, absolutely.
That's true. That's a true thing, you know.
It's so interesting you say that. I've learned, and I think this is one of my wonderful gifts of being an alcoholic and being sober, because you get taught very early on to pay attention to your body, to pay attention to how you're feeling, hungry, tired, fatigued, because you learn when you're tired and fatigued, your decision-making ability goes down and your ability to keep yourself safer goes down. So for me, I've learned that if I've got difficult stuff to do or complicated stuff to do, I'll actually rather put it off for a day or two until I can get the sleep. And you can send an email and explain it and say to people, listen, if you want, you know, if you want the best from me, then you got to give me basic time to process this and work through it. So yeah. I think if we look at it, and I want to go into some of the sleep disorders now as well, very, very simply put, that if I understand it correctly from what we're discussing, sleep is like servicing your car. It's essential. Your car will run without an oil change. It'll run without filter changes. It'll run without brake pads, but it's going to run for a shorter period of time. It's not going to run as long as possible. And you know, everyone talks about glute density and muscle density for longevity in terms of mobility, but I think sleep is number one. The more you can sleep, the better you can sleep, the longer you potentially are going to live. I'd love your thoughts on that, and then we can sort of go into some of the disorders.
Yeah. So if you think about, I spoke to Howard and your colleagues as well about this. We call it the health triangle.
Right.
You know, sleep at the bottom.
Yes.
Eat, and diet. Sorry, exercise.
Yes.
Sleep forms the foundation.
100%.
That's where everything rests on.
Yeah.
So sleep puts you in a position to help, to exercise optimally, to be productive optimally, and to eat healthy.
Yes.
If our sleep is not up to scratch, it's difficult to exercise because we are fatigued and we tend to put more junk food in our faces.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Because we're craving that that energy spike, you know,
yes,
to cope. And as you said, you know, we can run like this for years, and then one day, all of a sudden, boom. You stand alone, you know, you're by the side of the road. With that's a broken whatever, your call, whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Especially anyone who's owned an alpha. You got to be looking after everything in that car. You know what I'm talking about. There we go. So tell us about some of the disorders and challenges people face with their sleep.
So there are two types of what we see in practice. There's two types of groups of sleep disorders. You know, the one is the mental disorders, you know, like the insomnia-related issues. And the other one are the physiological disorders, okay? And the two most common ones, the two most common ones all over the world, the number one sleep problem in the world is sleeplessness or insomnia-related issues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other one, which is way more dangerous because it's a killer, is the sleep-breathing disorders, like mm-hmm. obstructive sleep apnea. And I'm talking about the obstructive part, and you know? I'm not talking about the neurological apneas that we get.
So that's not your mother-in-law holding a pillow over your face at night while you...
No, that's not it. We are talking... We are told it's got a similar effect, and if you think about it, it puts your sleep apnea, for instance, puts your body under immense physiological stress, and it impacts two things. It impacts your sleep quality, mm-hmm. okay, number one. So what I mean by that is you may sleep for 6 or 7 or 8 hours, but the quality of that sleep is only worth about 3 or 4 or 5 hours in terms of that. That's the one thing. The other thing that it does is, and this is more important, is what happens to our bodies if our airway closes down. So sleep apnea is when we sleep at night, our muscles relax. That's normal. Our muscles need to switch off. And then in people with sleep apnea, the airway closes down. It restricts the airway. And that restriction of airway prevents air from going into our lungs. And that in turn puts us under immense physiological stress. But because immediately our brains recognize I'm not getting enough oxygen. And then it tells your heart to beat faster because it's not, you know, I'm not getting enough oxygen, heart beat faster. And your heart needs to pump also with little oxygen faster and harder. And then, you know, to get, and then we wake up a bit. We go from a deep sleep stage or wherever it happens, REM or wherever, and it wakes us up a bit. And then the cycle repeats. And it puts a lot of stress into physiological sympathetic stress, fight or flight stress, you know, into our system, hour after hour. We measure sleep apnea by the hour. We don't measure it by night because it happens in an hour. So people with sleep apnea may experience some daytime fatigue. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's obviously snoring plays a big part, but not all the time. And it's very easy to fix, to solve the problem, but it's important to solve it.
Yes.
You know, because it doesn't impact your sleep only, it impacts your day as well.
The quality of your life and the
absolutely
how present you can be in terms of work, family, friends. So it can actually impact everyone around you.
So, and it's a silent killer.
Yes.
It's a silent killer. You know. Yeah.
What are some of the treatments for sleep apnea? I know the people have their sleep apnea machines where, if I understand it correctly, that increases pressure of the air coming in to keep the airway open. And you know, I have friends with sleep apnea, and when they travel, like, it's the number one thing that they're checking. Is there a constant power supply at the hotel? You know, it's so important. And I don't think, from the sense that I get, it's not about the fact that they don't want to die. I mean, that's a given. But from the quality of life improvement that they've gotten once they start that, what are some of the treatments and for sleep apnea?
It depends on the severity of the apnea.
Yes.
Okay. So there are treatments, like, for instance, which we call a mandibular plate. We call it a mandible advancement device that you can put in your teeth from a dentist, please, not from
Timu. sorry, Timu.
Exactly. Sorry, Timu. But anyway, it molds around your teeth, and it slowly pushes your lower jaw forward. Okay, just pushes your lower jaw forward, and in an effect to open the airways. We can't predict the effectiveness of the treatment. It's not also first line treatment. It can help for a snore, maybe. Okay. Then we get what we do as well is what we call positional therapy, where you and I spoke about the best body positioning we sleep in.
Yes.
During our sleep studies, we recognize sometimes that people, if they sleep, for instance, on their left hand side, their airway is nice and open. So if they don't want to go on CPAP, or if the CPAP is that apnea machine that you spoke about, I'll talk about that now.
Right. So I think, JD, sorry to interrupt, we've got to go to ads quickly.
Yeah.
And when we go back, let's touch on this. No need to shorten. We still have time. Thank you. You are listening to the Disco Medical Monday Show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm Nicholas Ingle, and I'm chatting with JD Ace, who is a sleep help therapist in private practice.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dischem. Better health starts here.
So before we went to ads, we were chatting about the different sleep disorders, sleep apnea, the implant in the mouth. See, my brain is a bit broken from lack of sleep, and then the other level. So if we can pick up from there, I think you mentioned something very important, that we don't know if a treatment is going to be a fix. So I understand it's going to be potentially a long-term process, working with medical professionals until you've got it right. So how do you get someone to sleep on one specific side of their body while they're asleep?
there's pillows that we can, we spoke about positional therapy. It's for me personally, as a clinician, that's my last resort.
Right.
Okay. Because it's not practically implementable so easy. You know, it's not easily.
I think particularly for travel and these type of things, right? Yeah. When you're in different
locations. So many
people
use this. I don't know if you're familiar with these pregnancy pillows. You know, some people use that to sleep, to stay in a specific position, and so on. There's a new, not new. It's a form of treatment that we call EPAP. It's expiratory positive airway pressure. Where you use, it's not attached to a CPAP device. We use it to put, it's not for severe apnea as well. You put it under your nose and it blocks your nose. It feels like you have a blocked nose when you exhale. And that air pressure, you know, gets blown back down your airway, and that pressure keeps your airway open. That works surprisingly very well. It's just uncomfortable. You've got to get used to it. The gold standard for sleep apnea treatment, and obstructive sleep apnea treatment specifically, is, after all these decades, is still positive airway pressure, those sleep apnea machines. At this stage, we cannot get anything better that beats that, you know, from a clinical point, from an effectiveness point of view. It's so effective that I can almost, depending on other comorbidities, I can almost guarantee an open airway,
sure,
you know, which makes my work a lot easier. So So that's it, yeah.
I think just everyone that I've spoken to over the years that has had, and because particularly having a gym and training clients, you need to discuss sort of what are some of the health challenges that they have, any issues. And when they have sleep apnea, not one of them has said that that machine is not something that they love and are passionate about because of the quality of life that they've received. Because I think when people come to see you, I'm sure it's already having caused a lot of problems and a lot of challenges. Actually, on that point, are people suffering from sleep disorders and potentially not even aware of it, where the effects are mild? So can we touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's usually, and that is, if you think about, nobody teaches us how to sleep. We know if we eat too much, we get big. We eat too little, we get thin and malnutrition and all of that. But and even in sleep apnea, I see that every day, even in sleep apnea, patients does not present with daytime issues like feeling fatigued or concentration problems or even snoring sometimes. They don't present with it. And the other thing is that they also don't present physically. If I, they don't present physically. It's all anatomically inside. That's the one issue. The other issue with that is that people will have very productive lives, and if they sit in front of me, I don't think sleep apnea. They don't feel it. I don't see it. But then after some discussions, especially with bed partners, then the little red flags come up, and some of those red flags include anatomical abnormalities in the airway, like big fat tonsils, and so on, and then also, upper airway breathing disorders are also a thing. So people don't present, so they don't know it. Also, in addition to that, many people start, especially from their 40s upwards, they started to present with other comorbidities, for instance, high blood pressure issues, blood sugar problems. Then they start to present with that, but they don't physically present with it. They don't look like they have sleep apnea. And that is where we depend on the general practitioners and the family practitioners to realize that. Investigate the reasons for hypertension a bit more.
So
Yeah.
on that point, would you meet a patient there because they've been referred from their GP or family
It's both
practitioner?
ways. Yeah, it's both ways. Yeah, then we from a specialist, from psychiatrist, cardiologist, physicians, GPs, that starts to see the issue, and they would like to investigate the sleeping problem. We've got many patients who's on sleeping medication, strong sleeping medication, who has sleep apnea, because of a lack of training, because of a lack of training. And the patients will say like something like this. They will say to their GP, "I don't know what is wrong. I don't sleep well because I wake up tired in the morning." And the GP or the doctors, and this is, you need to remember, there's no formal academic sleep training for doctors in South Africa. So there's very little training, very, very little, if you compare it to other pathologies. So the doctor was trained, he doesn't sleep well, let's try Stilnox or Dormanoct or Dopoquil or any other type of sleep medication. And they don't investigate further. But overall, the GPs and the physicians are doing a wonderful job in referring,
And that's sort of the most important thing, is to have a GP that's comfortable, or a doctor that's comfortable, to refer out so that you can
We
get
are
the different levels of expertise.
we are pushing the problem hard. We're pushing it hard with the South African Sleep and Health Association, to give academic training and so on. But anyway, yeah, that's baby off topic.
No. So just on that point, actually, for someone who's been involved in this field and this is what you practice, what would you like to see happening at the at sort of medical training level, at university level, at academic level, because as you said, sleep is, and I'm not a doctor, but I know how important it is. Sleep is the foundation of everything.
What we would like, this is what we're pushing for now at the Sleep Association, is obviously more academic training in sleep pathology, you know,
right,
sleep physiology, like neurophysiology, you know, how does sleep works, or how does sleep work, and so on, and then treatment and diagnosis and protocols of sleep pathology, sleeping problems. If the patient presents with these issues, what is it likely to be? And when do I need to look into sleep? Because many patients say they are tired, they fatigue, they don't mention. Because ironically, many sleep apnea patients sleep like, they say they sleep like babies.
Right. You
know? Because they're so tired and fatigued. So they put their hair down, they sleep.
Yes.
They wake up, they're still tired, but they don't mention it. And then, so the type of questioning that we ask is important.
Right.
Not how do you sleep? Because many sleep apnea patients will say, I sleep fine.
Yeah.
More important questions like what happens? Explain your sleep to me. Do you snore, for instance? You know?
Yes.
Do you wake up tired in the morning? Specific questions. They are also questionnaires. So I would like to see training in the sleep pathology, how to ask questions. And I know GPs have very limited time, but it's not a difficult thing. But anyway, yeah, so, and then treatment options. We compare with the best in the world, you know. I've been fortunate enough to study additionally postgraduate on with the World Sleep Academy.
Right.
And when I compare our, we have sleep doctors in South Africa. I know of three now. But anyway, yeah. So we know our jobs, you know. We can deal with the best in the world.
So I think to touch on, you mentioned sleeping pills, and I thought it's absolutely terrifying to think of someone with obstructive sleep apnea on a sleeping pill where they're under the effect, then there's much, you know, you're lowering your chance of waking up. If someone is needing sleeping pills, should they rather be speaking to someone like yourself first before looking at, hey, I'm not sleeping, can you give me something?
I would like them to talk to a sleep doctor first. I'm not a doctor, I'm a therapist. I mainly deal with sleep behavior issues and sleep apnea issues.
Right.
And I still need doctors to help me.
Yes.
You know, with that, because I'm not a doctor. But usually with sleeping pills, there's a very good place for sleeping pills in South Africa or all over the world. There is definitely, but it's not long-term therapy. It's not chronic therapy. Okay. And also in addition, when we are titrating people off medication, it needs to be in a structured, well-formed, managed way. We're not going to just don't leave the medication. We're titrating it down, providing these specific, like, you know, it's too long to explain now, but it needs to meet certain criteria before we can taper or titrate the medication down.
Right.
Just on that note on sleep medication, and to your listeners specifically, especially the listeners who suffer from insomnia, please remember that you have your own personal sleeping pill, inverted commas, in your brain.
Yes.
Okay? We cannot stay awake for the rest of our lives. It's like breathing.
That's it.
Humanly, physiologically, neurologically impossible. Okay.
Yeah. So don't stress about that. That's such a great point, and I want to touch on that when we are back from these ad breaks.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dischem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us so far on the show today. Absolutely fantastic chatting with JD Ace, who is a sleep help therapist in private practice. We're talking sleep challenges and issues. Jody, just before we went to ads, we were sort of mentioning that, you know, you can't stay awake forever. As we start to wrap up the show, I just wanted to get some of your advice and input in terms of helping people sleep better. What can they do in their day-to-day lives? I know for me, it's a big thing, and I did it last night as well, that you talk about people feeling, you know, sleep is a waste of time. I can be productive. I can work. I know my best times to fall asleep in terms of my rhythms is 7 to 7:20 p.m. or around 11:30 p.m. It's about that four-hour gap. So if I got to work, then I'll work later. But the moment I start to feel tired, I'm going to go straight to bed. I'm not going to fight that, lose that that special gap, and then be awake for another 4 hours. So what can people do just naturally to fall asleep better in their lives and at bedtime? And how important is being aware of your body?
Okay, so I'm going to break that down. I know we've got limited time. Two things quickly. Number one, I'm going to give very practical advice. Okay, all right. The first thing that we need to do is figure out what time we have to wake up in the morning to be on time to meet our daily responsibilities. And that's your wake-up time. That's your wake-up time.
Right.
Normal circumstances. Okay. Then we count cycles back. You know, so we have to fix our wake-up time. And then we count about maybe 6 or 7 or 8 hours back. And that's our bedtime. That's the first thing that we can do.
Right.
Also, interestingly, the things that we do during the day impact how we're going to sleep tonight. Okay. So it's not in isolation. So another thing that we can do in terms of to sleep better is to get sunlight early in the morning, even if it's cloudy, about good 10 to 20 minutes in sunlight without sunglasses, you know, it will help to adjust our circadian rhythm. Okay. And then also importantly, many people think the more time I spend in bed, the better I will sleep. And that's not simply not true. Okay. Count 6 or 7 hours back and use the bed for sleeping. Okay. There's nothing wrong. I'm talking about insomnia issues now. You know, it's not necessarily if you struggle to sleep at night and you struggle to sleep, there's either two things. You're simply not sleepy enough. Or your brain is not switching off. And the minute you get into bed, and your brain is switched on, we call that conditioned arousal. Get out of bed.
Right.
Get out of bed if you can't sleep. Give your body and your brain a chance to fall asleep. Don't try to sleep. Okay. Don't try to sleep. Don't lie there. Okay, I've got to work tomorrow. I've got to wake up at four. Don't do that.
Yes. You know?
Wait for the sleep to come.
Okay.
So those are all, and then exercise is also important, and diet is also important. You know, I can get more practical in terms of how to reduce a bit of stress. We can give ourselves also about an hour before bed. We can start switching off lights, getting off the computers, and getting off just to allow that sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight response, to switch over to a rest and digest response. And that's a circadian rhythm thing, you know. So we can just, you know, switch off the lights to start to release melatonin. I can carry on for this for about a day. But anyway, switch off lights an hour before, give yourself about 20 minutes to fall asleep, and then be aware how you feel the next morning.
Right.
If you slept a good 6 or 7 or 8 hours and you're still sleepy, you know, you're still sleepy and you need to sleep, you know, then it's time for some inspection. Then it's time to go talk to someone.
Okay. You know?
Oh, yeah, 100%. That's it.
That's basically it. So I think, you know, I love that because it's use the body to fall asleep, right? Use the natural processes.
Exactly.
Our bodies are smarter than we are. Sleep.
And I just want to mention another thing just quickly in terms of if you struggle to sleep one night, you struggle to sleep one night and you've got to be at work tomorrow, it's tough. It's not fun.
Yeah.
Okay? But you've been cope, and I'm talking about the insomniacs now. You've been coping with it for a couple of years, maybe months. I don't know how long, it depends. And then just go through that day. Don't try to sleep, because it immediately activates your fight or flight mode. And we don't need that to sleep. So don't try to sleep. Bite the bullet. Tomorrow is going to be tough. You're not going to sleep. So bite the bullet. Go through tomorrow. You won't die.
Okay? Yes.
Because tomorrow night, we call it a sleep balloon, for instance. Mm-mm. Tomorrow night, your sleep pressure will build up and you will fall asleep easier.
Sure.
And that's the frame of mind where we need people to be in. And I'm talking about insomniacs now.
But that's such great advice. Where don't go to bed stressed about trying to sleep. Trust the process of the body and that built up pressure, and allow that to help you to sleep. I absolutely love that.
Try to become hungry. People don't try to become hungry. you just become hungry, and it's the same with sleep. But it is true. We can set an environment where we can sleep better.
Yes.
So daytime activity. Eating healthy, sunshine, an hour before bed, switch off the lights, and so on. And then,
absolutely phenomenal. You know, we were chatting about sort of my challenges the last 3 months with traveling and work. And what's been insane is with the live streaming of the sports events from hotels. My life has been hotel, breakfast, venue in the hotel, dinner, back to the hotel room. So I was going through 10 days at a time without going outside. And eventually I got to the point of, I can't, you know, this is not good. And I'd go and just, if I had a 5 or 10 minute break, to go and stand outside and just put my face in the sun. And it makes a huge, huge difference. We have to get outside. And I, you know, especially as you said, early in the morning, that sunshine, it just makes such a profound difference to our quality of life.
You triggered another point, if I may, and
please,
if we have time.
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes. It's perfect. Yep.
Okay, cool. So in this 2 minutes, people, as humans, we don't give attention to ourselves.
Yes.
You get what I'm saying? I call it goose time. Goose time. Like a goose. Like the goose that lies the golden eggs. If you don't look after yourself, you can't lie the golden eggs. And if you can't lie the golden eggs, you can't look after your family. That's the one thing. The other thing that we need to mention is, it's such a rush. We work, 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 put the kids to bed, active, 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 bed, sleep.
Yep.
And then we struggle to sleep.
Yep.
So that hour before bedtime, when I say, we call it a wind down time in practice, that hour before bedtime, just sit and figure out. Just feel yourself. What am I thinking? What's my body telling me? A body scan. We call it a body scan. Mm-hmm. Just think about, where am I in my life? What am I feeling now? What emotions do I feel? What do I think? And just journal it out. Okay. This is part of therapy. It's not easy. It's not fun, because we go to those emotions that we don't want to get to, but that's actually part of the process. Emotions don't hurt us. Yes, I can carry on about this, but anyway.
No, 100%. And I think it's that connection with self, we're cutting out the rest of the world. So the more we're focusing on ourselves before bedtime, the less we're worrying about what's going on in the world. And I think it's a huge calming effect. For myself, what I've tried to implement is a 3-2-1. So no food 3 hours before bedtime. No screens 2 hours before bedtime, because it's a big challenge if I can. And giving myself an hour before bedtime for me. So whether that's sitting in a room that's dark and listening to jazz and having a glass of water and reading a book or a magazine, you know, just starting to, and then that 30 minutes going to bed, hot shower, cold shower, and then just getting
hot
into like hot shower.
Getting into bed, hot shower,
Because the hot shower then cools me down when I get in, because the body's now trying to cool down, dilating everything.
Yes.
So absolutely, and that's made a profound difference.
You know your stuff.
One last thing just to touch on as well is that, you know, I love what you said about getting to know ourselves. And we hear so much stuff like put the kids together and then spend time with your partner, right? You know, that's the time in the day. But also, if you put the kids to bed, spend time with your partner and yourself, because it's much easier to fall asleep when you relax. So, you know, JD, it's been absolutely fantastic chatting with you. I want to get you back on, and I'll speak to Sina, because it's vital, and it's something that can drastically improve our quality of life. And I'm going to say something a little bit harsh. Being an alcoholic and being sober for 19 years, the getting sober helped improve the quality of life of those around me that interact with me based on my behavior. And sleeping better is going to improve the quality of life of those around you, because they're getting a far better version of you.
I can tell you, stories that happened to us in practice, exactly what you're saying now.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, and on that, I cannot wait to get you back on. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to chatting with you next week.